नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स. So today's our Dhamma talk topic is seeing things as they really are with wisdom and ultimate application and its benefit. By now, I think all of you have become very familiar with this seeing things as they really are, because we have been talking about this all the time. Seeing things as they really are with wisdom, because it's given in the first sutta propounded by our Sammasambuddha, our Gautama Buddha. From the first sutta, he already said, Yattha Bhutam Jnana Dasanam. Because of seeing things as they really are with wisdom, seeing what as they really are with wisdom, Four Noble Truths in its three aspects and 12 modes. Okay? So now we go further on this. Seeing things as they really are with wisdom, we will have to talk. To this Tuesday, we talk about an ultimate application and its benefit. Next week, we will talk about a conceptual application and its benefit. But these principles, yatha bhutam jnana dasanam, seeing things as they really are with wisdom, in its original form, always refers to ultimate application, ultimate realities. The same principle, we apply it in the conceptual world, then we find it also very beneficial. Okay? So, today we'll talk about the ultimate application, which is the application proper given by the Buddha. The conceptual one, we are trying to use the principle to help our Buddhists in their daily life only. But the real purpose the Buddha put forward such a methodology, yattha bhutam jnana dasanam, seeing things as they really are, was actually very much meant for ultimate application in its eventually for liberation. Now, what are the things that we need to see as they really are? What are the things? What does it mean? Ultimate application. That means we need to see ultimate realities. Paramattha Dhamma. So now the question, what are Paramattha Dhamma? It's become very important. What are Paramattha Dhammas? Nowadays, you find in different systems, different traditions, they all talk about Paramattha Dhamma, especially when they talk about Vipassana practice. So when you talk about Vipassana practice, you will talk about Paramattha Dhamma. But what are Paramattha Dhammas? That is crucial. Okay? That's crucial. And why so? We have to ask ourselves, why? Why Paramattha Dhamma is so important? Why different definition of Paramattha Dhamma? When we define ultimate realities differently, the impact, the result is very, very different. Why so? What is the science behind it? Why we care so much about how we define Paramattha Dhamma, ultimate realities? Simple reason, because of its benefits. What is so special? Okay, let's look at this. What is so special? So, in a Buddhist understanding, when we refer to Paramattha Dhamma, ultimate realities, we always go by the Abhidhamma definition. You know, the Tipitaka, Vinaya, Suttas, and Abhidhamma. Tipitaka. But sometimes people want to question, oh, this is not taught by the Buddha. No, Dvipitaka. No, Tipitaka. From the ancient time until today, we always understand as Tipitaka. Three Pitaka. Three baskets of teaching of the Buddha. So one Pitaka is Abhidhamma. Abhidhamma does talk a little bit about conceptual truth, like Pugala, how the being, many types of being, nature. But most of the Abhidhamma teaching is about Paramattha, ultimate realities. So, let's look at how Abhidhamma defines ultimate realities. When it comes to cittas, consciousness, or mind, consciousness, in Abhidhamma, is given as 89 cittas or 121 cittas. This is actually four types, four categories. Citta, mind, cetasika, mental states. Third category, rupa, materiality. And then the fourth paramattha is nibbana. Four types of paramattha. Mind, or it's consciousness, better translation as consciousness, mental states, materiality, and nibbana. So four categories. And out of these four group of ultimate realities, there are two unique. One is nibbana, unconditioned, arising and passing away. Not arising and passing away. Unconditioned and not arising and not passing away. That's nibbana. Because it is not conditioned, it is... It doesn't appear or disappear. It is there all the time. Permanent. That's nibbana. Then another category is this three things. Consciousness, mental states, and materiality. That's given in the Abhidhamma. Ultimate reality refers to these four things. And nibbana is not something that we can, it's a result. After the end of striving, you come to realize nibbana. That's it. It is not something that we work on, we create, and then, no. So for vipassana, as far as vipassana is concerned, we don't spend time talking about the final result. Why? If the result comes, it's the result. We care so much talking about the paramattha, the ultimate realities, that becomes our essence of our practice. Or the basis for our practice. The footing for our practice. Based on what? Based on which? We strive, we practice, we penetrate, so that we can realize another paramattha, which is nibbana. If you want to realize nibbana, you have to work on what we can see as they really are. We work on this. You want to realize that, you work on this. If you work on this thoroughly enough, then you will realize that. Nibbana, not the unarisen, not passing away, unconditioned, peaceful state. Permanent state. So, this is the fundamental in our practice. So now, this consciousness, mental state, and materiality is important. So when you talk about three category, that's how Abhinav define it. But if you try to see the quality of it, basically to materiality and mentality. Mentality means consciousness and mental states. And mentality, nama, rupa. Nama includes citta and cetasika. And sometimes we analyze separately. But when you analyze citta, you cannot run away. You cannot miss out cetasika. When you analyze cetasika, the mental states, you cannot miss out the consciousness. Why? Because they are inseparable. You cannot separate citta from cetasika. Just like you cannot separate water from the states of water, right? If you have water, you have the various states of water. Whether the water manifests in the form of waves, in the form of vapor, in the form of ice, in the form of clouds. And when it's given put in a container, it has contact with the container, a cup or whatever, you know, and it takes the form of whatever container that contain the water. So all these are mental states, and the taste, the color, the smell. So just like water has various states, similarly, our consciousness always carries various state of consciousness. That is mental states. Okay? So now, but when we practice vipassana, we analyze, we try to break through and see in distinctively, the states and the consciousness. Like that. So now, let's look at this. Consciousness. How many types of consciousness do we have? Is given in the Buddha's teaching. We have 89 or 121 cittas at a glance. Depends on how you define it. 89 means, you see, we have the unwholesome cittas, unwholesome consciousness. Then you have the rootless. Then you have the sense sphere, beautiful cittas. Five material means the jhana, jhana, and immaterial jhana. Immaterial jhana just four. Four. But why you can come up with 12? When you apply it to the enlightened state, then you become. Okay? Immaterial sphere, wholesome. In material field, the resultant in material field, functional, then you have that. And then you have supramundane citta, 8 or 40. Immaterial means arupa, jhana. You have boundless space, boundless consciousness, nothingness, and neither perception nor non-perception. But when it manifests in the same of cause, then it's wholesome, immaterial, wholesome cause. But it manifests as a vipaka, then the four, then the functional, which is the arahant, then it becomes four. Okay, today is not for us to talk about this. Today I won't go into this. It takes a long time. This is Abhidhamma course. Then supramundane cittas, you have four. Four means the supramundane. But when you enter it, from using the various jhana, then you can have one, or you can call it five. If you based on the jhana, you enter that path consciousness, that path consciousness is unique. Come with the jhana qualities. So like that. Okay, put aside this. This is not the Abhidhamma course today. Today I guess you all have learned from Xia Le Wukong. that's better, it could have been better explained. So just this. These are the consciousness, ultimate realities. Then let's see the 52 mental factors at a glance. 52 mental factors. You have these 7 universals. Universals mean all consciousness has it. Contact, feeling, perception, volition, one-pointedness, life faculty, and attention. Then 6 occasional. That means sometimes occur, sometimes doesn't occur. No, it doesn't occur in all the consciousness. Sometimes only. So we have initial application, sustained application, decision, energy, zest, desire. Then the unwholesome factors. You have delusion, you have shamelessness, fearlessness of wrong, and restlessness. Then you have unwholesome occasional, sometimes occur to unwholesome mind, sometimes doesn't occur. Greed, wrong view, conceit, hatred, envy, avarice, worry, sloth, topper, doubt. Then you have beautiful factors, 25. Beautiful universals, that means in all the wholesome mind, you always have 19 beautiful universals. And you have 3 abstinent, right speech, right action, right livelihood. 2 illimitable, compassion, appreciative, joy. Metta, it comes under the feeling part. And then the upekkha comes under the, also that, the upekkha feeling. Then non-delusion, wisdom faculty. So these are the ultimate reality we need to know. And let's look at the 28 material phenomena at a glance. Great essential. All rupa you should have. Earth, water, earth element, water element, fire element, air element. Then the sensitive phenomena, eye sensitivity, which is inside our eye color, eye decade kalapa. You have this eye sensitivity that capture light. Ear sensitivity that capture sound. Nose sensitivity that capture the smell, and then the tongue, the taste, and the body. Body sensitivity capture tangibles, capture earth, fire, or air. Okay. And then the objective phenomena, you have visible form, sound, smell, taste. But the body one is earth, fire, or air. 3. So it is not another new element. Then the sexual phenomena, femininity, masculinity. This is a sex element determine that you are a woman, you are a man. Then the heart phenomena, the heart base, life faculty also. Life faculty, we have the mental one and you have the physical one, life faculty. So when you see someone is dead, very obvious, life faculty disappear, no more. Then nutriment, space element, bodily intimation, vocal intimation, this is the actual one that we use for vipassana practice is this 18. Then the rest join in the 18. Space element, bodily, more vocal, they don't exist by themselves like that. It exists in as a quality of the 18. Okay. Lightness, mobility, worldliness, then production, continuity, decay, impermanence. Okay. So when you practice vipassana, you know all 28, yes. But ultimately, for vipassana object, it is the 18. But you will know the other 10. Okay, put aside. We are not going into details. So these are the ultimate reality. When we see things as they really are, we means we want to see all these ultimate realities. Why? Do you ask a question? Why? Is it for scientific curiosity? We do all this? Just to satisfy ourselves that, I know it? No. It has its practical value. That's the purpose of tonight's talk. What is the difference, the big difference between ultimate realities and conceptual reality. What are conceptual reality? When we look at men, women, and you look at enemies and friends, and look at big house, this country, sovereignty, land, whatever you call, space, the space in the sense that, oh, this is my airspace, this is your airspace. Now sometimes the country, they can fight over it also. So all these are concepts. And if you really go deep into the problems of the world and problem of beings, all the fight, all the strifes, all the struggle always occur because of this grasping to conceptual truth. This is my race. This is my country. This is my beloved ones. This is my enemies. But eventually, what is life? What is there? Is there anything permanent entity, anything lasting in the enemy that we call an enemy, in the friend, in the beloved ones? But because people hold them so dearly, so strongly holding on to these concepts, all the problems in the world happen. But is it real? Is it real? Is there anything that's substantially so different between a Palestinian and a Jew? Is there anything so substantial in between them? Is this something so substantial in a white man, a black man, and a yellow man, an Asian, a Latino? No. When we go to ultimate realities, all these grasping, conceptual grasping, they cause so much suffering, so much selfishness, so much strife, vanish. In the ultimate realities, when we see, get down to the ultimate level of this thing that we call a human, a beloved ones, an enemy, my nation, my race, all vanish. That is it. That is a discovery of all the Buddhas. That there's another aspect of truth beyond the superficial truth. Oh, this is my cup. If you break my cup, I get angry. But beyond the fact that we know this, we call it the cup. But you get down, there's another reality to this. Beyond this, it is arising a pathway at extremely fast speed. You are not using conceptual, oh, it is impermanent, eventually one day it will disappear. If someone steals it, it will disappear. Yes, you can also reflect like that to think about impermanence of this cup. But that doesn't produce the bhavana maya panya, the wisdom by seeing ultimate realities as they really are. You don't derive this benefit. Only when we practice the wisdom strong enough that we can see the ultimate realities as they really are, as impermanent, unsatisfactory, and non-self, then this seeing liberates our mind from the strong grasping that we hold so dear since the beginningless past. As long as we stay on that level of conceptual grasping, we never find liberation. Suffering always stays with us. So this aspect of truth is very important. It's not for curiosity. It has its practical value. It has its practical value. How? Again, we ask a further question. How? You see, when we talk about conceptual reality. Man, woman, enemy, friend. What does it mean? First, we hold on to an illusion of compactness. We hold on to an illusion of compactness. That this friend of mine, this enemy of mine, is like that, is like that. We hold on to it. But when we practice the wisdom to be able to see things as they really are, up to ultimate level, you see all these things. Oh, this person, this friend, this enemy of mine, that I call enemy, that I call a friend, they are just a bunch of consciousness, mental states, and materiality. There's no permanent entity in it. And they are arising and pass away at extremely fast speed. That it is futile, useless for you to hold on, to try to hold on to it. There's nothing to hold on to. Then, by the time we first experience this ultimate reality, this knowledge comes to us. Of course, level by level. There are many, many levels to it. Many levels in the sense of stronger, deeper, and more impactful to our observing mind. So this ultimate reality, compactness of grouping. Compactness of grouping. Gana. Because of this, we hold on, we hate, we attach all kinds of complication of mind occur, because when we don't realize these ultimate realities, we take a person at least superficial surface value. Just look at it. Oh, this is the handsome, this is beautiful, this is ugly, like that. Then the Buddha guides us to see reality. The Buddha, because eventually purification, real purification, strong purification, reliable purification occur due to seeing reality, not due to brainwashing. Brainwashing can purify our mind to some extent, but it's not really reliable. It is because of seeing things as they really are, seeing ultimate realities as they really are with wisdom, that produce lasting purification until we come to the realize the path knowledge, and that knowledge become irreversible. So you see, first when we see this level, we break down the compactness of Sammohagana. Not only that, is it consciousness also like that? You know, consciousness, we don't want all this mind, that mind as one. Actually, the mind has a lot of elements, a lot of mental states, and it is the mental state that play different functions. Later we'll talk about that. So this, the materiality, you also break down the Sammohagana. The mentality, the mind, also you break down the Sammohagana. The grouping. You take everything as a group. Someone hurt me. You refer to your heart, your mind, your feeling that hurt. But if you break down compactness, you will see it is a feeling or it is the ego that got hurt. You know? Precisely. Like that. Okay, now, Sammohagana. There's so much to talk if you want. So beneficial. We break down this. What more? When we hold on to conceptual truth, we always say, oh, this person, yesterday, yesteryears,
in the past, caused this harm to me. So now I want to take revenge. Because we hold on to the compactness of continuity. As if today the person I see is still the same person that I saw last year, 10 years ago. That's why the Chinese, the Chinese wuxia xiaosuo, when they take revenge, take revenge, 10 years or so, not too late. You can take your revenge. 10 years or so you want to revenge. 20 years or so you want to take revenge. Why? Because you hold on to the compactness of continuity. That 20 years ago the enemy and 20 years later is the same enemy. No, not like that. All have arisen and all pass away. When we experience all this ultimately, the materiality also arise and pass away all the time, even every moment. Oh, uncountable the times that the beings, the ultimately of the being arise and pass away at extreme fast speed. Is there a permanent entity between there and now? No. But is there some kind of relationship? Yes. Cause-effect relationship? Yes. Just like it's given in the example as like the yogurt. Where does yogurt come from? Yogurt comes from milk, right? Without milk, you don't get yogurt. But is yogurt and milk same? No more the same. Right? So a bit similar like that. You can check. So when you practice until you see for yourself, then you see all these ultimaties arise and pass away extreme fast speed to the point you cannot, not a moment you can hold on to anything. So that you break down compactness of continuity. And what more? All these, when we break down these ultimaties, all these ultimaties, they function differently. It has a different characteristic, different manifestation, different function, different manifestation, and it has different proximate cause that produce it and cause it to appear. But mainly it's a function. So when we hold on to this, oh, this person is loving, or this person is good, this person is bad. So when someone, when someone has been good to you all the time, suddenly the person may end up being acting selfish to you. Then we notice sometimes people say, in the past he has been kind to me, or wrong one. Now I know he's selfish to me. So you brush aside all the good he did to you in the past and hold on to it. Because in our mind, we hold on to one entity. So this person, good must be good, bad must be bad. It cannot has both. But actually, what happened? It could be that when the person was kind to you, he was really kind. Because the kind mind, the loving mind, occurred to him, arose in him. So he appeared very loving and kind. But due to later on, some circumstances, some kind of stimuli that caused the mind to react, or maybe to be disenchanted with the world, or very disappointed, or very highly provoked, then another side of the negativities appear in the person's mind. So when the person was good, the good mind appeared, good mental states appear, the kind mental state, compassionate mental state, compassion appear, then he act very kind to you. Then later anger appear, then that anger act bad to you. Just like that. Because the anger functions differently, compassion functions differently. At different time, different things appear in his mind, and he act in this way and that way. This is very wonderful. Let me tell you. If you can see, you can break down compactness to this level, you can have a very wonderful, embracing mind towards others. And very strong power of understanding towards others. Now you are kind to me, I appreciate. Now you are bad to me, I also know how to watch out. You know? Break down compactness. You break down compactness. People who don't break down compactness, what behave in their life? Later we'll talk about a conceptual level. It can be very funny. You know, there's a very funny saying that you throw the bathing water for the baby, and you also throw out the baby. You know? That is people who don't break down compactness. You think, oh, this dirty water is dirty, so the baby is dirty, throw out everything. No. It looks funny, but no. In life, you find many people, they throw out the rubbish, they throw out the diamond in the rubbish as well. Because, oh, this is dirty. But those who can break down compactness, they do exactly take out the dirty, the bad things. They cut everything. You know? The doctor will open up, dissect your brain, take out the tumor, try to cut very carefully, only to cut the tumor, not to cut the good brain. Right? That is breaking down compactness. Try to separate this and that. The tumor functions separately, the brain functions in a wholesome way, good way. But the tumor functions in a bad way. So take out the tumor and keep the brain intact. But today, we talk about ultimate reality level. So you know this mind, wholesome mind in one way, unwholesome mind in one way, and this person sometimes wholesome mind arise, sometimes unwholesome mind arise. Like that. So once you have this ability to break down compactness, wisdom naturally arises in you. Naturally. And it's very important wisdom. The wisdom to distinguish moment to moment whatever you experience. You don't hate people wholesale. You don't need to love people, attach people wholesale. No. Take it point by point. Discard the bad one. Take the good one. Utilize the good one well. Okay? So, how many types of compactness? For materiality, you have three. Compactness of grouping, compactness of continuity, compactness of function. Okay? When you see, analyze all these 28 types of materiality, 89 or 122 types of consciousness, or the 52 mental states, you break down compactness. The grouping. The function. And when you see them arising and passing away every moment to moment, you break down the compactness of continuity. So this is the same for materiality and for mentality. There's one more. Aramanagaha. Compactness of object. Okay, or we can object, or you can say so. English translation, I think it's object. Is it? Compactness of object. It refers to object. Aramana. Oh, what is this? You see, when you break down compactness of materiality, you break down compactness of mentality in three levels. Grouping, continuity, and functions. Sometimes, in fact not sometimes, almost for sure, you have some kind of, it is my mind, my wisdom that is seeing or breaking down this compactness. Some kind of I feeling is there. Very difficult to discard. So people feel so good about themselves. You notice? When a yogi, oh, I practice up to this level, oh, so good. And sometimes it's rejoice, okay, fine. Sometimes it's pride. I can do, other people cannot do as I do. My nimitta is brighter than other people's nimitta. I can see this. I can see anicca, dukkha, anatta. Impermanent, suffering, non-self. But while you are seeing non-self, you have a sense of self to see. So difficult to overcome this self. While you are seeing a lot of non-self, non-self phenomena, you still have a feeling of a self to see it. So what to do? Our vipassana practice is very, very powerful. Now, take this mind, this wisdom, that is analyzing this anicca, dukkha, anatta. Take this seeing mind, penetrative mind, take them as object. The mind watching the mind. How? The mind doesn't see itself, just like the eye doesn't see itself. But it is a new, for example, you have entered jhana. Okay? Enter jhana. When you emerge from jhana, you analyze, you see the impermanent suffering of non-self of your jhana consciousness. Jhana thought process. Similarly, that jhana thought process already passed. But immediately you emerge and you check. Okay? You are actually seeing the past mind. You record. That's why when you emerge from jhana, it's quickly, few seconds, 1 or 2 seconds, half second, you check your 5 jhana factors. When it occurred, it was already passed. Immediately passed. Okay? Similarly, so you have this training when you analyze 5 jhana factors. At that stage, you already know how to check the past mind. But not so distant, immediate. Almost immediate. Okay? But later, it's no more strange to you anymore. You have to experience it that from when you check 5 jhana factors. So when you come to this vipassana level, you see, anicca, dukkha, anatta, anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, suffering, non-self. Then immediately after that, you use a new vipassana insight to check your vipassana insight that just occurred, just a moment, just a split of a second ago. Okay. That take impermanence, suffering, or non-self as object. That wisdom, that knowledge, that takes impermanent suffering or non-self of materiality or mentality as object. That also, that knowledge, that thought process, again with the new mind, take it as object and analyze it up to ultimate reality level. What does it mean? When you see up to ultimate reality level, you break down the knowledge thought process, the wisdom thought process, the breakdown, the grouping, the compactness of grouping, breakdown the compactness of continuity, you know, breakdown the compactness of its function. Of course, when you say function, not only function, also characteristic, function, manifestation, and proximate cause. But function is the main one. So this is called Aramanagana. You break down compactness of this object. You break down. So this only occur to the mind, the mentality. It doesn't occur to the materiality. Why? Because the materiality doesn't have the ability to take on other materiality as object. Only mentality, our mind, and its mental states can take on materiality as object, can take on mentality as object. So because it has the ability to take other object, you need to take the wisdom mind as object in order to break down compactness. Otherwise, some sense of I is there. I am seeing impermanence. I am seeing suffering. I am seeing non-self. Oh, that wisdom is seeing impermanence. That wisdom is seeing suffering. That wisdom is seeing non-self. And somehow, you still believe this is the self. This is what occurred to many Hindu masters. They try to learn from the Buddha's teaching somewhat, a non-self doctrine. But up to some point, they fall back to their Hinduism idea of Paramatta, the big self. So they always talk about, eventually you see non-self, you want to merge with the big self. With that, no way to get enlightened. No way to get enlightened. Some kind of holding on to the mundane level still occur. No way to get enlightened. You only uplift your conscious level. So, you need to break down the four materiality, got three compactness, grouping, continuity, and function. Mentality, these three also have, but you need to break down another compactness of object. Take the wisdom mind or knowledge mind as object. Then the very subtle attachment to the self get broken. So what is the benefit? When you break down all these compactness, you have the most beautiful despair in the world. I call it despair. Beautiful despair. Because it is a false hope. It is a false hope holding on to a being, an enemy, a friend, a beloved ones that causes all the suffering. Now when you look at this, I call it despair means what you use to hold on to. When you see them as they really are with wisdom at the ultimate level, they have no hope to hold on to. No chance. Not a single moment you can hold on to anything that arises and passes away at extreme fast speed. Just like you don't hold on to air. This is even deeper. Air, you may still try to catch air somewhat, you know. But this is completely impossible. But level by level, okay? Different level, different depth of realization. So different depth of realization produce different level of purification. And first stage of path, first path, fusion, path and fusion knowledge. Second, path and fusion knowledge. Third, path and fusion knowledge. And fourth, path and fusion knowledge, which is the Arhant path and fusion knowledge. So, it's liberating. Seeing ultimate reality is actually liberating and purifying and enlightening. That is the benefit that we go for. That is the benefit, what we are doing here. For those benefits, we are doing the hard work here. Paying attention to your breath, doing metta or Buddha Nusati or Marana Nusati, whatever. Different people are practicing different method. All for the same goal. So that we break down compactness so that we can free our mind from the grasping. But this is only one level. One aspect only. Still not enough. Because this only helps us to see the noble truth of suffering. Remember, when the Buddha talked about noble truth of suffering, eventually he refers to the five aggregates of clinging. Right? Sankitena panchupadana khanda dukkha. The Buddha refers to that. Not enough. Vipassana practice, we don't only practice based on the noble truth of suffering. That needs to be understood, need to be seen as they really are. Need to be penetrated. This first noble truth. We need to see the second noble truth. When we see seeing things as they really are with wisdom, It doesn't only refers to the first noble truth that we need to penetrate. And then we have a second noble truth of the origin of suffering. Basically, it's dependent, the elements of dependent origination. Ignorance, craving, the sankhara formations, consciousness, namarupa, material mentality, six bases, and then contact, feeling, craving, attachment, and the being, and then old age, sickness, death. All these elements of one leads to another. One is the origin of another, leads on to another. And it goes in cycle and cycle and cycle that constitute our experiences in samsara. Life after life after life. This need to be not only seen, need to be cut off. The causes of suffering. But no way to cut off if you can't even see. You must be able to see. And seeing is enlightening. Seeing is purifying by itself. So, then, this noble truth of suffering and the noble truth of the origin of suffering becomes our vipassana object. We need to see the impermanence of them, the unsatisfactoriness of them, and the non-self nature of them. Why? What benefits do we derive by seeing all these things again and again? So that, again, because of the deep penetration and understanding, deep insight into these realities, we get disgusted, we get disenchanted, we see the terror of them, and it is useless to try to hold on to such things, and it produces a liberating effect. Letting go of all the condition and arising and passing away. For what? What is so good in letting go of it? So that we have a chance, we give our mind a chance to realize the unconditioned, the peaceful element that doesn't arise and pass away. So by now, do you know the signs of purification? By seeing, by understanding, by penetrating, we break down all those illusions based on which all our defilements arise. And now the Buddha taught us to destroy the defilements by working on the base, the illusion. We can break down this illusion by seeing ultimate realities of mentality and materiality and their causes. And then the mind get naturally purified because of the ultimate realities. That is the benefit. The benefit is the liberating force, the purifying force, and eventually free us from the rounds of birth and death. That is why it is so important that we need to see things. Things here refers to ultimate realities as they really are with wisdom. Of course, it won't stop here. If you can see thoroughly the noble truth of suffering and the noble truth of the origin of suffering, it gives rise to a chance to realize the third noble truth, the noble truth of the cessation of suffering, which is Nibbana. And the effort to do this, Samatha and Vipassana, is basically the noble truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. Because this is Sila Samadhi Panya training. Samatha basically is a Samadhi training, and the Vipassana is a wisdom training. The wisdom training to realize Bhavana Maya Panya, the wisdom through direct experience, through insight. Not the sutamaya panya, hearing wisdom, not the thinking wisdom, cintamaya panya. That you can practice before, even before the cultivation of morality. But it is the bhavanamaya panya, the realization kind of wisdom, which requires a good foundation of virtue and concentration. Okay? So, all Four Noble Truths will be covered by this tool of enlightenment. Seeing things as they really are with wisdom. Yatha Bhutam Jnana Dasanam, which is given in the first sutta, Dhammacakka Pavattana Sutta. So, we should care about it. Why it is so important? Because of its benefits. Because of the science of purification, the natural law, how it works. Then we need to cultivate seeing things as they really are with wisdom. That wisdom requires Sila, Samadhi, Panya. This requires training, yes. So that you practice the Eight Noble Path or from different perspective, 37 acquisitions of enlightenment. You practice that. But some people say, oh, it's hard. But before you come to that, there's another one which is easier to cultivate first, which is the attitude. See things as they really are. Not by willful, wishful thinking. No imagination. Regard reality as they really are. It requires satcha parami. Truthfulness. Only when we practice a lot of truthfulness, be honest to ourselves. Be honest to truth. Be honest to the world. This is the attitude. And people who don't have the attitude, no matter how smart and intelligent, somehow, when they come face to face, encounter realities, the mind, some kind of distortion is there. And not easy to see realities also. This satcha parami is important. In the 10 parami, when you talk about satcha parami, it also refers to Four Noble Truths also. And so it is a practice, it is a reality, and this is also the attitude, how we regard things. But when we cannot do it, when ego arises in our mind, we cannot do it. So it is so important to let go of the ego and be honest to ourselves and take things as they really are and cultivate this attitude. And cultivate the ability to penetrate beyond superficial truth. When these things come together, we can see things as they really are with wisdom. So please cultivate this attitude. Just regard things as they really are. So often we find people, they interpret things based on their positioning. 皮骨决定脑袋. Have you heard about this word? 皮骨决定脑袋. Where you sit, decide how you think. Right or not? That's why you find sometimes there are two groups of people. The Russian will always think, oh, the Russian is correct. Muslim. Married. Majority. And the Ukrainian will think, oh, they are right. They only see them from a perspective. They support their leaders. These are support their leaders. Same Jews and Palestine. Actually, what is truth? You find truth are different. They hold on to truth this way, they hold on to truth that way. Same, you find Chinese and Americans, same. The Americans will always think they are correct and the Chinese think they are correct. Mostly. Right? Why? Because people cannot see things as they really are. That's how people go into factions, grouping. When they go into this group, they stick to this group. And in the political parties, you find, you know, in the parliament, in the congress, you know, this group, they always vote this way, that group also vote that way. Isn't it very strange? Because 屁股决定脑袋, where you sit, you take position, decide. This is not seeing things as they really are. Never 100%, not possible to be really honest and objective, no. Human mind cannot work in that way. But, because the interests are involved. Self-interests are involved. So they will interpret things from their perspective of self-interest. Selfishness. Never believe people are really so altruistic, so selfless. Never. So not easy. You see the whole world, all the top leaders, they cannot do it. They cannot have this really honest, objective attitude. Cannot be really fair to others, to be fair to their opponent, to be fair to their competitor. They cannot do it. Why? 屁股决定脑袋. Where you sit on your buttock, decide your brain. Because they cannot see things as they really are. There's like no fairness in the world. No justice. So difficult to have real justice in the world. You know? These people are my allies. 我的盟友. So, favoritism. If I favor my ally, my people, my group, it's always like that. So with this kind of attitude, if we strengthen this kind of mentality, this kind of attitude, very difficult to see things as they really are. Only when we really free ourselves from this holding on, attachment to myself, I am, my race, my people, my ego, my enemy. Only we free ourselves from this, then it is possible to be really objective, to be really true to realities. So, before we come to this insight knowledge, to be able to penetrate reality, this we can help ourselves much earlier before that by cultivating the real, genuine, honest, true attitude. Seeing things as they really are with wisdom. So on another level of training this quality, I will talk about it next Tuesday. Based on, because today's topic is, we speak on this first, because this is what was meant by the Buddha. But on another level, next Tuesday I'll speak on it, on the level that every one of us, whether you have reached Vipassana or not, every one of us can cultivate that kind of mindset in our daily life, in our leadership, and in our dealing with other people, and then use it well. And whatever we cultivate in our daily life serves as a plus point for our eventual ultimate application to ultimate realities. Seeing things as they really are with wisdom. Okay? So for that, hopefully this talk, I don't know how much you understand, but at least coming to the end, you get this point. This attitude, this kind of mindset, this kind of application of wisdom is very beneficial for our liberation and also will be beneficial for our daily conceptual world, living and dealing, and become an art of living. Okay. Any questions?
Bhante would like to seek further clarification, seeing things as they are really are. Does that mean seeing kalapa arising and passing away? Thank you.
Not only kalapas. When we talk ultimate reality, even kalapa is not ultimate reality yet. It's still a concept. Only when you break through the kalapas and see the earth, water, fire, wind, sensitivities, whatever the femininity, masculinity, or whatever, heart rate. All these are, only those are ultimate realities. Even Kalapa is not yet ultimate reality. Because Kalapa still give you some kind of compactness, sense of compactness. Okay? Especially in higher Vipassana insight. Kalapa is no more there. You see only ultimate realities. Okay, huh? Sharing your merits, huh? Idang me punyang asawa kaya wahang hutu. Idang me punyang nibana sa pachayo hutu. Mama punya bagang sabba satanang bajemi. Te sabbe me samang punya bagang labantu. Sadu, sadu, sadu.